House Rules, Elections and Public Affairs Committee, for March, May 20th. Representative Zach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here today in bringing you HGR 68, which establishes a state mushroom in Oregon. This is something that was brought to me by a constituent, and they are here to speak to the bill. I know time is the essence, so I think they will be brief. I will just say something to the effect that I know we have lots of memorials that come through the committee, and although I do think we all reflect upon the various aspects of our culture, we think about our state song, our state bird, our state tree. We do. There is a precedent for these types of symbols for the culture and history of the state, and I think it's appropriate that we be considering having a state mushroom as well. And I understand Oregon is not the only state with a state mushroom, so we're not setting a precedent here. But I will let my constituents and friends here today talk to you briefly about what they want to do. Introduce yourself.
My name is Kevin Winthrop. I'm a physician in Portland.
Jack Zarnecki from the Joel Palmer House in Dayton.
Maggie Rogers, member of the Oregon Mycological Society. That's mushrooms.
I'll just give you a quick brief overview of why we would like the chanterelle, the Pacific golden chanterelle, to be the state mushroom of Oregon. Historically, Oregon has been very well known internationally for its wild mushroom tradition, and there's several reasons why the Pacific golden chanterelle should be noted as our state mushroom. It's unique to Oregon and Washington. This particular species is found nowhere else besides the Pacific Northwest. And number one. Number two, the mushroom is of high culinary value. I'm hoping Jack Zarnecki can speak to that. It is exported overseas. It is harvested in great abundance here in the state of Oregon. In 1992, over 600,000 pounds of this particular mushroom were harvested, representing many million dollars of industry in our state. I guess I'd also like to say that unlike other mushrooms that are harvested here, the chanterelle, again, is unique to our area. Other state mushrooms have been founded. The Minnesota state mushroom is the morel mushroom. Also, the state of Missouri has also established the morel as their mushroom. And as far as I know, no other states have established the chanterelle mushroom as a mushroom for their state. And again, I'd like to say this particular chanterelle, which was previously thought to be the same that grows in Europe and the rest of America, has recently been identified through molecular analysis to be actually endemic to Oregon and Washington and found nowhere else. And so this truly is our chanterelle and really no one else's. So.
Thank you.
Again, I'm Jack Zarnecki from the Joel Palmer House Restaurant in Dayton, just up the road from you. But I haven't been there very long. We've been out here for 2 years, in fact, and we moved 3,000 miles from Pennsylvania to be closer to these glorious mushrooms, chief among them the golden chanterelle. For years, when wintertime came around in January and February, and people said, okay, where are you getting your mushrooms now? I would have to whisper, Oregon. So I decided to make the trek. We closed the business back there. They've been open for 80 years continuously to reopen in Oregon, to come out to your glorious state, to be closer to the wonderful Pinot Noir, but especially the mushrooms. So when we looked for the best combination on the planet of wild mushrooms and wine, it was the date that we came. And to speak on the culinary aspects of chanterelles would definitely be redundant because it's well known. It is among the finest of all the wild mushrooms. Oregon should be proud to have virtually its own species. And I can tell you that as far as it being state mushroom, it's already a fait accompli because any major person who appreciates mushrooms from any other state in the Union will tell you that the Oregon chanterelle is prized among any others. I think this particular step would be to officially recognize what already is known throughout the other 49 states as being of extraordinary culinary value.
Thank you very much.
I'm Maggie Rogers, and one of the activities I got into about 16 years ago was publishing a journal on wild mushrooming. And it was one of those things that just happens. I won't explain the whole story to you. It wouldn't be worth it. But one of the things that we have followed ever so closely is the whole question of mushrooms as an economic thing. Because at first there was this fear that mushrooms could be overpicked. And then the question came up, and we had no research on that, either from professional mycologists or from amateur mycologists. Everybody had an opinion, of course. So the Oregon Mycological Society began a study of just how the chanterelles do grow. And what they found was that if you're looking for a trustworthy crop, the chanterelles probably are the one of the mushrooms, wild mushrooms, that are trustworthy. Because you'd have to see these plots that we study. We've been doing it now over 10 years. There is a little wooden stick put in where the mushroom fruits each year. And after 5 or 6 years, it looks like these little bouquets of sticks, because the mushrooms come up in the same place from a mycelium, an underground portion of the mushroom growth that is established there and retains its health there for a long, long time, decades perhaps. They are found with hemlocks and dug fir, and so wherever you find those, you're liable to find the mushroom that we're talking about.
This study is the only study in the world studying the chanterelle mushroom, and it is here in Oregon.
I'm sure you have lots more things on your mind than food at this time of day, but if you should want to glance over these recipes, we will have them back for you when you leave out.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
that's Mr. Chairman, I first just want to object to Representative Beck, knowing that we are going to be on an evening floor session today until probably 10 o'clock this evening, having a hearing that's talking about sauteed mushrooms and peanut noir and all that other good stuff. It's just a little unfair knowing that we're going to get peanut butter and jelly sandwiches out of House Lounge for dinner tonight.
Well, thanks. We do cater. I appreciate it.
I think it would be appropriate today that Representative Beck pick up the bill for the catering for this evening's floor session.
If I could add one thing, this is the third generation of restaurant business centered around mushrooms. His grandfather and his father were both restaurateurs in Reading, Pennsylvania, and that's where he learned it, at the knees of the parents and the grandparents. Am I close?
Oh, yes. This is a book I did in 1996 called The Cook's Book of Mushrooms. I have 3 books out on mushrooms. They are considered the definitive works in cooking with wild mushrooms. This one won a James Beard Award in 1996. And I shouldn't be saying this. I guess I'm making things worse under the circumstances.
Only for Representative.
We are in a bit of a timeline here today, and I do appreciate you folks coming and bringing this forward and welcoming Representative Beck and allowing him to bring this forward today. And it's kind of a good idea. I'm personally partial to morel, but if it's chanterelles, then I guess it's chanterelles.
Mr. Chair. Yes, I would agree with your statement. I mean, not taking any against the chanterelle, but the morel is such a much superior mushroom.
Can I take a sip?
We like them both.
There is a state. The state of Minnesota already has morel as its state mushroom, and that's one of the reasons we considered that. But
it's by our own name that we have. Okay, well, I think what we'll do is close the public hearing. Was there anyone else in the audience that came to testify on this today? We'll close the public hearing on HDR 68 and open a work session on HDR 68.
Thank you.
Chair.
Yes, it's in Beck.
I would move HDR 68 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, there are a motion before us to move HDR 68 to the floor to do pass recommendations. Is there any discussion? President Devlin.
Mr. Chair, I remember last week when 2 of the colleagues from my own caucus threatened to do a minority report if I left an item in the bill. But I won't do that today.
You don't wish to do a minority
report? No.
Okay, is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering if you want to join in on the report to change it from chanterelle to morel.
That'd be great.
Earlier in the session, I might consider that, actually, but to this stage of the game, I'd rather not waste the time, but it may be interesting. Any further discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so moved. And Representative Beck will be the carrier. And we move on. And we'll close the work session on HCR 68 and open a work session on House Bill 2007.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you, Joe. And on.
Green sample
crystal. Yeah.
Defender of my
colleagues, you have before you several new amendments to House Bill 2007, and some other facts, other information received by our staff, Muriel Goldman. The A-21s were drafted at my request. You also have the A-20s and the A-20s and 22s. And who's the author of the 22s and the 20s?
Down here, Mr.
Edwards. Do you wish to review those for us?
Sure. Just briefly, in order, I guess the -20s set up a cap on the size of the health security fund. Right now there is no cap. At least I haven't looked at the -21s. I don't believe there is a cap on how much money that and how large that fund will get. So this puts a $200 million cap on the fund, and then any payments once it gets to that size, it goes into the general fund. And I can speak to why I think that's necessary now, or we can wait. And then
go ahead.
So the reason why I think this is necessary is that if I believe what I think we're trying to do with this fund is sort of set up a stabilization fund of sorts, whereby we could actually, if certain economic factors happen or we head towards a recession, we can use the money or the money to be tapped. In the way this bill is set up, if you look at what's going to be offered in the -21, you're limiting the purpose of this fund when certain events happen, and by, you know, potentially this fund could be extremely large, larger than I think any one budget item would be. I think you need to have some flexibility in how you're going to use this fund outside of healthcare if you have that economic decline. So therefore, I think a $200 million fund is completely adequate to meet the needs of both healthcare as well, if you want to use it for healthcare as is described in the -21, and gives the opportunity of future legislatures to decide how they want to allocate future revenues from there. So that's what the -20s are. And then the -22s simply address an issue that we talked about the other day with the State Treasurer's Office reports, which is to give them the ability to start to look at the potential of selling a portion of the tobacco settlement. And that basically talking with the Treasurer's Office and Legislative Council gives them the beginning point to have that discussion. The actual bill that would set that up is a lot more complicated and needs to be addressed in a different manner, but this gives them the direction to start that process. It doesn't mean it will happen. It just means that they can start to explore that. And the rationale for that is I do believe there's a good need to try to look at selling a portion of this settlement. It doesn't in any way distract from what we're trying to do with this health fund in 2007. It's just a different way of getting the money into the fund early. And if you adopted the $200 million, and depending on how much you want to sell, you could actually fill that fund up right away. You have the money right away to give out to the earnings as you outlined in the -21. So I personally, I think it makes a lot of sense to try to get some of the money in hand today for different uses. And how we use that, you're defining that in one way with 2007 as a policy. You want to use it for a health fund. So I'm just suggesting, and Representative Williams talked about this in the past, about the idea of selling a portion of this tobacco settlement. So that's what 2007-22 does, is it gives the state treasurer, who would be the one, the division that would actually go out and start to look at marketing or basically selling parts of the settlement. So We heard testimony the other day from them that somebody's here if you want to ask them any more questions, but that's what the Dash 22s do. Which doesn't, again, detract from what 2007 is doing. It just begins the process of how you fill that pot. That's it.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Williams.
Representative Edwards, do you think the 22s are necessary for the Treasurer to already begin the process of undertaking a study to see whether or not doing that is a good idea?
Mr. Chair, Representative Williams, yes. Again, speaking to them, and perhaps you could argue the language that was drafted here, but they need some direction, and this would give them some direction to begin that. There's no, they don't have the ability, and somebody from the Treasury can speak to that, the ability to even go beyond. They put out a plan, but they need some direction from the legislature as to how they might go about that. And again, the Dash 22 is in no way binds this group to say that it will be done. It just gets them going down the path of further down the path of looking at an option for us as a state.
Mr. Chair, would you accept the motion so we can start discussion on the bill?
Yes, I would.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 21s into the bill that I would
cause. We have the Dash 21s in front of you as well. We've had a lot of discussion about the various items that are included in the Dash 21 amendment. It includes taking the money from the National Tobacco Settlement that is due to Oregon when that money arrives and allocating it 40% of the earnings, but not more than $7 million a year, to counties for public health and mental health programs. 20% of the earnings, but not more than $5 million in each fiscal year, to elderly and disabled transportation projects. 20%, but not more than $5 million a year, to housing and community service departments to provide housing for persons with disabilities or very low and low income families and individuals. 10% to the Health Division for Tobacco Prevention Education Programs, and 7% to Oregon Health Sciences University, not more than $10 million over time. For the intellectual capital fund, and 3% of earnings, not more than $1.5 million each fiscal year, to the DHR for the Department of Shelter Care Grant Program, and allocates to provide the economic trigger that was indicated in the Dash 8 previously, for cases of an economic downturn when the fund can be accessed for other issues. It includes how the legislative assembly might access the principal. Put in some details of how the approach to the counties is going to be allocated. So the counties, no county will receive less than $50,000 in a fiscal year. Details of the Oregon Health Sciences University, which is the Dash 15 amendment for before us Tuesday. Details of how that program is to work, and also includes provisions in section 9 of distributing excess earnings in amounts greater than those specified in section 2 of the bill. Gives legislative assembly the authority to do that, and provides that the funds in section 10 will be distributed no later than 1 year after the first payment of money to the state of Oregon. I would, if the maker of the motion would agree to consider a conceptual amendment on page 2, beginning on line 13, ending on line 14, and deleting the language between the commas, so it would read that rather than 10% of the earnings, about more than $2 million in each fiscal year to fund tobacco use prevention, education, and cessation programs administered by the Health Division, and just delete the but not more than $2 million in each fiscal year language.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Williams?
Are we in a...
You are in work session.
Okay, then, Mr. Chairman, I would move for suspension of the rules for purposes of conceptually amending the Dash 21.
I believe we have a motion before us from Representative Byer.
Then I'll move to the firm.
It is.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mack.
While that motion is pending, it's appropriate to seek suspension of the rules to allow some adjustments to the pending motion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's appropriate for that motion to be made and seek unanimous consent or, if necessary, a vote of the committee for suspension of the rules to allow for such amendments.
Okay. So we have a motion before us that's unanimous consent that we suspend the rules for purposes of conceptually amending line 13 and 14 of the bill. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chairman, I just questioned, I don't have objection to the conceptual amendment, but I'm questioning the parliamentary procedure of it, and I guess as long as it's agreed to a suspension of the rules, and everyone on the committee is not going to make an objection afterwards if we did it wrong. I don't believe we can amend the motion. We can amend the motion, but not to the substance of the motion.
The motion to amend is always in order.
And you have to take them and see once they come.
Yep.
So we all make sure to proceed.
Mr. Gardner?
Well, Mr. Chair, while I will not object to the, to the motion to remove the $2 million cap, I would like to go on record clearly stating that I personally feel that the 10% for cessation and prevention is not nearly adequate enough. I think that the clearly the way to end, cigarette usage is certainly through cessation and prevention programs. If you look at the state of Washington, for instance, when they just ended their legislative session, they just ended up spending, a tremendous amount more money than this, somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 million, and I just don't feel that the 10% is anywhere near adequate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Newgarden. Mr. Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, I would concur with Representative Gardner, and I would ask the committee ought to also consider the fact that I think in all of our discussions that we've had on this, and though it's been several weeks since those discussions occurred, we all share some common knowledge, and one of them is if all this money is sequestered and basically put into a trust fund,
with all due respect, what we have pending is the suspension of the rules. We should simply do that, and then we can move on to the conceptual amendment, which is taking off the cap, and then we can move on to the substance.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, taking no problem with Representative Mannix's comments, I would agree with that. And I can get my comments in later.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Devlin. So, yes, we have the, is there any objection once again? Hearing none. The rules have been suspended for the purposes of conceptually amending line 13 and 14. We'll just line out the but not more than $2 million in each fiscal year language.
I would think we would also need to see if there's any objection to that amendment, which I certainly don't object.
Mr. Chair, I would move that
special amendment.
Yep. Okay. So the motion before us to conceptually amend line 13 and 14 by removing the not more than $2 million fiscal year language and then object to that conceptual amendment to the bill.
I object, Mr. Chair, and the reason is this will be 10% forever. So, and if the advocates that were before it wanted $18 million, so I would like us to amend the bill to reflect that rather than an unlimited 10% of whatever the size of the fund is. I think it'd be huge. So that, at least if we amend it as you're describing it, 10% of the fund forever.
Well, we have a motion. We did agree to suspend the rules.
Objecting to it.
Okay. He's arguing about it.
Right, we've suspended.
We have suspended the rules, and we have a motion before us to conceptually amend.
Right.
And if we have an objection, we can call the roll.
So,
Representative Wells.
Mr. Wells, you just demoted him.
Trust me, Kevin. You make more money doing what you're doing.
Big pay cut.
Aye.
Representative Meyer.
Aye.
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Edwards.
No.
Representative Gardner.
No.
Representative Mann.
Aye.
Representative Hirsch.
No.
Representative Scar.
Aye.
Representative Welsh.
Aye.
Representative Williams.
Aye.
Aye. Motion to consent to amend having carried. The consent to amend is adopted. And Representative Edwards, did you wish to offer another amendment?
Mr. Chair, we have not adopted my original amendment yet.
We have not adopted the dash one.
That's correct.
Discussion, Mr. Chairman?
Discussion on the motion.
As to the dash 21 amendments, and obviously you have to keep in mind the alternatives which will be offered, I just favor the alternative. I favor the idea of setting aside these funds and having the principal available and earning money. I also recognize that at any given time we could differ somewhat about how one might make good use of the earnings. I'm pleased to see an approach taken where the earnings would be used in a proactive way, generally related to the health and welfare of the community. Many of us have things that we would like to see in here. Some of them are, some of them are not. It's hard to make a judgment call. We certainly don't want to say dissipate the amounts made available, that it becomes a negligible amount for any given program or category so that they can't do the job right. In fact, one of my most persistent criticisms of government is that we chronically underfund some programs and we wonder why they're barely there. We should choose to either fund programs adequately or not fund them at all. But as to the breakdown that's presented here, county health programs and county mental health is a very significant component. It may be a slightly higher percentage than I might have chosen, but in balance, it's one of our highest priorities, and it fits in with the needs of the community. We've already heard discussion before about housing, so I won't even go into that. I certainly favor that breakdown. The elderly and disabled transportation component is extremely important. It's something that many of us have advocated for. I will note parenthetically that some of us would have liked to have seen funding for Oregon Project Independence, but we know we can't do everything in this package. The tobacco prevention portion is the minimal that I would think acceptable, the 10%. I'm glad we've taken off the dollar cap so that if there's a growth opportunity there, we can do more, but at least 10% of this will be going into the prevention side, and that's very important. The OHSU, I think you've heard enough information about that to justify it. I'd like to speak to the last point, the earnings for shelter care. I think that I just heard graphic testimony in the Public Safety Subcommittee as to the need for shelter care and assistance for women who are victims of sexual assault. We have a number of categories of funding programs for shelter care, but here we are trying to do something special, which is to take existing programs that have been substantially reliant on the community for support that have a track record and boost them. The testimony we just heard a couple of hours ago in the Public Safety Subcommittee had to do with the chronic search for funds for these kinds of programs. I'm particularly impressed with the funding for housing for pregnant women and women of newborns who need a place. And I'm just delighted that we were able to include this because there's some very worthy programs out there in the community. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm strongly in support of this particular amendment that's proposed by Representative Breyer. Breyer. Can't talk with that.
Motion is...
Breyer's I said no. What's going to Breyer?
I believe Representative Breyer has the motion pending before. Is it the other one?
Mr. Chairman, since we're now actually on the Dash 21 amendment and testimony on the actual contents of them is appropriate, I'd just like to highlight some items on here that may not be clearly visible to people looking through them. One, the caps that are put in here on page 2, it will be quite a while if all that you're doing is utilizing the interest off this fund that you will get anywhere close to those caps. For instance, for the county health programs, instead of $7 million, which is the maximum in a year, in the first finding, and based upon what we've been told by DAS, it would be about $2.8 million a year, give or take a couple hundred thousand. For elderly and disabled transportation, it would be about $1.4 million a year. For housing and community development programs, $1.4 million a year. For prevention and cessation, about $700,000 a year, which is a very dismal amount given the fact that this is a settlement that's based upon the impacts of tobacco on our health care costs, and the clear evidence that the more that we invest in cessation and prevention, the significantly less cost that we will have to pay in the future for those health care impacts. And for the others, two items, they're splitting up basically 10%, so it's about $490,000 a year for OHSU and $210,000 a year
for the shelter care programs. I think when you look through these programs, every one of these is worthwhile, and I think there are ways to meet these funding requirements and still do some of the other things that we all hope, I think, that we can do in this building. So in discussing this with the minority members on the committee, I don't know what our final determination will be, but what we've talked a little bit about is we will go ahead and support, I hope most of us will support the amendment, but when it comes to actually voting for the, to pass the bill out itself, we will oppose that and offer a minority version that I think will fulfill some of the same requirements in terms of funding some of these clearly important needs, but also fund some clearly important needs that need to be funded at the state level, which we have an opportunity and which we have actually no excuse for not funding.
I concur with what my colleague just said, but I also want to express my concern that when you add up what this is going to be in the short run for these particular programs, it is so much less than what they need, and at the same time they're being defunded and what done in ways and means, that somehow there's a disconnect here for me. And I know that what we're being told is that this is in lieu of the money that they would be getting down there, but what it looks like to me is it's going to appear that we're doing something that we're actually not doing, and I do have concerns about that.
Colleagues, it is not to my knowledge that monies here are in lieu of, but and that has not been expressed to me, with all due respect to my colleagues.
Here?
And this certainly is a policy decision. And over time, this fund will grow to many hundreds of millions of dollars, and we will have established a source of funding for the programs we've outlined here that should be completely removed from the general fund debate and the debate going on inside this building every 2 years, and by this ongoing consistent funding.
President Byer. Mr. Chair, because it appears we are now under a call of the House, I move previous question on the motion. Okay, colleagues, we have a motion before us, and the discussion has been moved to adopt the A20-21 amendment to House 2007. Mr. Wells, please call the roll.
Yes.
President Atkinson?
Aye.
President Beck?
No.
President Byer?
Aye.
President Devlin?
Aye.
President Edwards?
Aye.
President Berger?
No.
President Bennett?
Aye.
President Scrucci?
No.
President Card?
Aye.
President Welch?
Aye.
President Williams?
Aye.
Chairman, before you drop the gavel, we have had some discussions before this meeting, but apparently some people have changed their minds. I'm going to change my vote to no on the amendment also.
Mr. Wells, please note that the person doesn't change to no. The adoption of the dash 21 amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Edwards.
Ask for the adoption of the dash 22 amendment. Mr. Chair?
Next.
I would assume that the Dash 22 are being offered as a substitute for the Dash 21 since they would... No?
No, the 22 is the...
Oh, sorry. You need the language.
Never mind.
I'm not...
Can you discuss on the motion?
Yeah.
Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chairman, while I don't... And I would hope that the Treasurer's Office would continue to explore the possibility of securitizing the settlement fund, and I think it's worthy of further discussion. I guess I'm still personally not convinced that the addition to this bill through this amendment is absolutely necessary. So it's with some reluctance that I think I'll oppose the amendment. I would continue encourage the Treasurer's Office to continue working on that issue and presenting its findings to the legislature. As an independent elected statewide officer, I think the Treasurer has his own authority to be able to do this investigation and bring us his findings about whether or not this does or doesn't make sense. And I would hope that this committee and this legislature, before we close, would still have an opportunity to discuss that issue.
Further discussion on the motion? Thank you, Representative. Representative Atkinson.
For the record, I'd like to concur with Representative Williams. And my concern is the chicken out before the chickens arrive. So I don't know if we need to go this far yet, or if we have any possibilities of meeting this at this point. But I would continue Representative Williams' comments with exploring the issue.
Just so I get it on the record, this amendment was drafted with the help of the State Treasurer's Office, so it's clear that they do not have authority to basically enter into selling this one, and this is the beginning process to at least explore that one step further. And that's all this is. And in my mind, it's a friendly amendment, but policy question, I guess.
Sure. I would be surprised if the State Treasurer did not have inherent authority to study a good idea without specific statutory authority. If there was an expenditure involved here, I could support the need to expend some money to do the study, but I don't think the State Treasurer needs our permission to brainstorm and to bring in smart people and ask their opinions, with all due respect.
No further discussion. Mr. Wells, will you call the roll on the motion, please? Motion to adopt the Dash 22 amendment. Call the roll in reverse order, please.
Chair Simmons?
No.
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 Yes.
No.
Representative Berger? Yes. Representative Edwards? Aye. Representative Simmons? Aye. Representative
Meyer? No. Representative Beck? Aye. Representative Axelson? No.
Motion having failed. Mr. Chair,
Representative Beyer, I move House Bill 2007 as amended to the floor with a due path recommendation.
Call your motion to force to move House Bill 2007 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Sheriff, Ms. Carr?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I want to comment on the fact that it's been made that there's not a lot of dollars in the first years in these programs, but I think that this is a starting point and a foundation that we can build on, and that I look forward to down the road these categories and the monies that are appropriated would have there'll be more available. So I think it's a step in the right direction and a good foundation out of the city.
Sure. Representative Beck.
Well, I just want to express some frustration, as I have often in this session, about the process we're going through here. This is one of arguably the most important bill we've worked on in this committee, as partially evidenced by the number of people, but also the diversity of interest groups in this room. I think what we're doing today is incredibly sloppy. This is a big deal. And we're calling a previous question before people had a chance to talk on amendments. I think I would like to see more information about how this fund, we have this chart here. I'd like to see how this is going to be impacted by the way these various funds are broken out. We had some hearings on this, I don't know how many months ago, and there's been lots of inside dealing going on behind the back room, but very little public discourse about what the right plan is. We also all know that this is going to be part of a budget negotiation with the Senate and the governor. It seems to me that it would have behooved us to sit down as the members of the House and work out a bipartisan agreement that our chamber can speak strongly for, working with the governor, disagreeing, agreeing to disagree, and agreeing on a plan that maybe we could take to the Senate as something the House wants to support with a strong, vigorous majority. And I'm not only frustrated with the process here today, the cursory nature in which we're doing this. We only saw these amendments this afternoon, and I just think we're making a huge mistake not trying to work this issue out in a bipartisan
collaborative manner. And I don't mean that with any disrespect to you, Mr. Chair. It's just some frustration I have with the process on this bill. And I think, it's shameful. I'm sorry. I feel that way.
Mr. Chair, I would wholeheartedly disagree with my colleague from Portland about this as being a sloppy process. This bill has been worked on by everyone, and it's yet to be seen. It's going to be a bipartisan event, and we'll put this bill to the floor. We'll let them find out if it'll be passed from the House plan, because if it gets 31 votes, it is, in fact, a House plan. So I would wholeheartedly disagree that things are, not thought of and being done sloppily. And I feel that my colleague is, impugned the chairman and the whole committee as a whole.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGuire. Kristen Williams?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say, with respect to this bill, that there's probably no particular piece of legislation in this body that I have worked harder on since the beginning of this legislative session. And I will say frankly that, like many things in this process, I'm not completely satisfied with every piece and component, but I think that this committee has done, with a lot of work, that everyone in this committee could participate and certainly has participated in numerous discussions with me on this issue. I think there is the end game, as my good colleague from Portland mentioned, still may be somewhat in play. But I'm going to support House Bill 2007. I think it answers at least the two issues that I brought to this committee at the beginning of the session, which is housing and senior and disabled transportation services. It is a place that we can begin to secure a long-term commitment to programs that currently have no real home within the budget. That was my initial intent when I brought initial amendments to a bill that was originally sponsored by the Speaker and the Senate President. It is still my intent. It will be the thing that I fight for and potentially die for by the time this session is over, depending on how it goes. But I would urge all of us, and I recognize what a difficult challenge it is in our current budget cycle, is everybody is scrapping for any hope. I mean, what we're fighting about in this bill, colleagues, is not real money. It is the hope of money yet to be received. And look at the room that's here today, and the people that are filling it up with their hands out. And I understand it. And I understand no, I do. I understand it, and I understand the process. But for once, in the name of all that is reasonable and rational, let's put our partisan bickering bullcrap aside and make a choice that is right and that is good, and that we're going to protect this fund from invasion, that it will be something that we can turn to in an economic downturn and can begin to build a place that Oregon can have some security in its budget process. So let's vote the thing out, and I hope we can do it in a bipartisan fashion, and I hope it gets votes on the floor, and I hope the governor doesn't muck around with it, but if he does, then the sin be upon his head.
Well, Mr. Chair, with all due respect to you and with the risk of stepping in bullcrap, I guess what I want to say is that this is the most significant part of the budgetary process that we're looking at this session. And I don't underestimate the importance of the work that you've done and the importance of how we deal with this settlement. But I will tell you, because we have not even had number one budget conversation in this building, it's very hard for me to believe that I can make a vote today on this that has any reality in the whole overall budget. And that in the end, this particular piece is going to have to come and intersect with all the other pieces in this building, and we are all going to have to be respectful of us all being at the table together to make those decisions. And that hasn't happened yet.
Mrs. Welsh.
Well, to not repeat everything I said to begin with when we opened up in 2007, though I don't like this tobacco settlement. I think it was extortionate. It's very worse within this whole country, and very shameful, and I'm very worried about the precedent it affects. And I wish Oregon had not tainted their credibility by being involved in it. And I'd much rather see the dollars go back to the people, those who have paid food taxes, high costs for social programs and medical programs for those who have certainly had problems with smoking. And so I
I believe that I don't like to vote on this, and I don't want to, didn't want to from the very beginning, but I think a very responsible way of using those dollars, now that they are possibly coming, is before us. And so I will reluctantly vote in that manner.
Thank you, Mr. Will.
Briefly, what we're attempting here is a good concept. I think it does need some fine-tuning, and I think in the end of the day, this will be part of the end game, and there will be further discussions about what this is going to look like. I do think one of the critical flaws in the bill has been drafted, as has been adopted here, or in the conceptual amendment, has to do with tobacco prevention, education, cessation, and actually, we are short-funding dramatically that program, which has been very successful so far, and I just believe that's one of the fatal flaws here with this program, is we're 10% to begin with of some very small amount is going to be pretty meaningless for this program, and I personally think that's where we could have done better with this proposal. But having said that, I just feel generally we're going down the right path. There's some things that need to be tweaked in this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colleagues, you've already heard my pitch about the components of the amendment, so I won't go into that. I will mention that we have not, in this package, been able to give due cognizance to those who managed to get these funds for us. And while some may disagree about participating in that package settlement, it certainly has provided the opportunity for us to address some issues. I appreciate the leadership support for, in effect, sequestering these funds and protecting them because they are uncertain funds. I've heard others call for us to assume that we're going to get some of this money and spend it. I'd much rather talk about getting the principal in hand and then knowing that we can use the interest earnings for established programs that need help. And that's the emphasis here. We're not trying to set up some new stuff. This isn't rocket science. The reality is that there are probably a dozen other programs, and I've got three or four of my own favorites, that aren't on this list. Some of us choose to participate in this process and choose to engage in dialogue and choose to try to be in parts of the package, and some of us may not engage in that dialogue. I chose to engage in the dialogue. I recognize that there's some figures here that really represent some senatorial interest. I'm glad to see that because it tells me that there's some investment in this packaged by our senators, and that's important because I think it means that there's more likelihood that there will be some certainty, not certainty, but at least some probability that this package will go through. The bottom line for me is that the allocations made here are good and natural things to do. There were some other choices, some of which I would have made. I would have, again, done more for the prevention. But in this give and take, one has to give as well as take. I'd also say, as someone who participated for two sessions on the minority side on Ways and Means, at one time being called the Appropriation Committee because of a real schism between the Senate and the House, I learned that it's important to squeeze your way into the conversation one way or another and try to make sure that all issues are considered. Some of my Democratic colleagues may not think that their concerns were addressed, but believe me, I've mentioned to a couple of my colleagues, if you look at this list of allocations, how can you say that these aren't things that Democrats traditionally advocate for? Elderly and disabled transportation, housing, health programs at the county level. Actually, all of these are things that my Democratic colleagues advocate for, and there are things that my Republican colleagues advocate for. It's just a matter of where you're going to prioritize. I was proud to be the advocate for the shelter care grants, which weren't even on the list at the beginning of this discussion, and I'm pleased to see that we have that in here. And I know I'm making a lot of remarks, but I'm trying to cover a wide range of issues because there is no such thing as perfect sausage in this process. All you get is edible sausage. And I think this is actually more than edible sausage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Colleagues, the job of dividing the baby is very difficult. And the funding is, while small at first, will grow.
There are programs that are worthwhile that need to be funded. They have been neglected in the past, and this is an opportunity, as I indicated earlier, to provide a funding source with the hope of a very bright future. And with any luck at all, we will survive the process with this intact as it goes with the Senate, and these items will remain as they are in the bill and be funded in the future. Mr. Wells, please call the roll.
Atkinson?
Aye.
Representative Beck?
No, sir. Notice of possible minority report.
Representative
Byers?
Aye.
Representative
Edwards?
No.
Representative Edwards?
No, and
serve
notice of possible minority report.
Representative Manning?
Aye, and serve notice of participation in the majority report.
Representative Piercy?
No.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Welch?
Aye.
Representative Williams?
Aye.
Pearson?
Aye. Representative Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, I'm also serving notice of a possible minority report, and Representative Edwards will be joining with me in that minority report. I believe he's indicating that.
So we might have two minority reports.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. You may only have one, but you might have two.
The motion is carried, and House 2007 is for the due pass recommendation. And I'll sign myself to chair.
We should probably go this far.
Are we coming back to committee after 4? Let me check in and see what's going on before.
Okay,
we will reset.